KDLK. And now, here's Jack Patty.
Good morning. Welcome into Friday's 9 to 10 show, the 5th day of June, American DA Live. Caldwell attorney Ray Larson with us, and a cast of tens. Brought to you by Landscaper's Corner, celebrating 10 years in business, your one-stop shop for all your landscaping needs. Landscaper's Corner, 1305 Old Frankfort Pike. Call 225-9433. Our question of the day brought to you by United Structural Systems, your foundation repair and waterproofing experts. iFixFoundations.com, 859-254-7700. Our question of the day is, how often do you lie? You tell us at WVLKAM.com. Tune in for the results with Cruiser and Crew between noon and 3. Ray Larson, good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Jack.
How are you today?
Just fine.
Good, good. Tell us who you brought with you today.
Well, Brad Bryant is a prosecutor in the office, and Aspen Carlisle is a prosecutor in the office, and Sergeant Ron Keaton is the supervisor of the collision reconstruction unit with the Lexington Division of Police.
It's either Ron or Brad that are smelling real good this morning. I'm not sure. Which one of you guys?
I make no apologies.
You don't? Okay, Brad makes no apologies. All right. Yeah, I'm catching a nice scent over here from one of you cats. All right, so what happened?
I think it was me.
It might have been you. Yeah. No, actually, it didn't happen till Ron came in. I think Ron's got something going. This is, as we talked about, we do what you call in the radio business a tease in the half hour before our show, and we talked about this case, but a lot of folks didn't hear that, and this is a situation where two absolutely innocent people who were doing nothing more than driving their car were killed.
End up dead.
Tell us about it.
Well, it was January the 14th, and there was a guy named Keenan McLaughlin was the cause of this crash. And Brad, why don't you give us the facts?
Well, back on January 14th of 2014, Keenan McLaughlin was he was involved in a heroin deal over in Scott County, and unbeknownst to him, he was selling to some heroin to an individual who in turn was selling to a confidential informant. And the Scott County Sheriff's Office was running what they call a controlled buy operation. When McLaughlin made the deal, he then took off, and the deputies went after him, trying to pull him over. And it ended up turning into a couple of mile chase into Fayette County. He got up to speeds around 80, 90 miles an hour.
This is on Georgetown Road.
And this is on Georgetown Road coming into Lexington. You know, as he got over there close to Berea Road, he lost control at a high rate of speed and hit Geneva Spencer and Luis Gonzalez head on. It ended up killing Mr. Gonzalez instantly, and then Miss Spencer died about 60 days after the collision.
Okay, so Sergeant Keaton, why don't you tell us what happens when something like this occurs? Tell us how you get involved in this as the supervisor of the collision reconstruction unit. How do you get involved in this kind of event?
What happens, the supervisor, first responding supervisors on the scene show up, and they make the determination that it's going to be a fatality collision, so they request a collision reconstruction unit call out.
Now, what makes you guys so special?
We go through approximately 240 hours of specialized training in reconstructing collisions, and then several members of the team have gone through other specialized schools in other areas, such as motorcycle crashes, pedestrians and bicycles, commercial motor vehicles, just to name a few.
So how many in that group?
Currently, we've got 10 officers and one other sergeant besides myself. And we go through this specialized training to kind of helps us learn how to find the tire marks in the roadway, and we use those tire marks, damage analysis on the vehicles to try to come up with speeds. And then we try to work these cases through kind of like you would a homicide, robbery, homicide type investigation.
Now, Brad said it speeds up to 80-something miles per hour. Is that something that you guys determine with your science?
Correct. We used a method called conservation of linear momentum. Both the cars have a certain amount of size coming into the crash, as well as a certain amount of speed. Whatever comes into that crash has to come out of the crash. So we take the weight of the vehicles and the speeds of the vehicles as they're coming in. We had a very good witness statement on the victim's car as to what their speed coming into the crash was. We come up with post-collision speeds by looking at the tire marks and the distance that the vehicles traveled after the collision occurs. And then we input that into this formula, momentum formula, and that gives us the pre-collision speed of the suspect's vehicle.
That's science, right?
It really is. Yeah. And if you ever go to one of these courses, they have a short course on this, which it's all physics. And Brad and Aspen and I and a couple of others in the office have been to a number of those classes so that we know what we're talking about when we get into this. But
were there skid marks on with both vehicles, or did the...
On this particular case, the roadway was wet that evening. And
that
so
makes a difference too, obviously.
That makes a difference too. Sometimes you don't have those nice dark tire marks on the roadway, but we did have a lot of gouge marks in a crash of this magnitude. The forces coming in, the cars forced down into the roadway and caused gouge marks. So we actually put the cars back together based on those marks. We matched the damage of the cars, different pieces of metal underneath, to the marks on the roadway to determine exactly where the cars were, what angles they were coming into each other, and take overhead pictures to demonstrate that for court. And then based on those marks, we know the final rest positions where the cars stopped, and then based on those marks, we know how far they traveled after the collision.
You got to shut it down, right? You got to shut the road down, right?
Well, so that's one of the, you know, there's always the complaints.
Yeah.
Why can't you just move the cars and let us
right.
go through? Well, the crime scene is the highway, and all of the marks and all of the gouge marks and the tire marks that for example, they're different kind of tire marks. There's a yaw and a skid. What else?
You got yaw marks, skid marks. You got squeegee marks.
Wow, really?
A squeegee mark, we kind of call it a squeegee mark. It's kind of the cleaning on the roadway when the roadway's wet. Sometimes you can see it just kind of looks like you took it, you're taking an eraser and drug across the roadway, and you can kind of see that cleaning of the water off the roadway.
How long did you have the road shut down? I'm just curious with this one.
Particular
remember
case, I think it was probably about 6 to 8 hours.
Yeah, see, that's and that road was, you couldn't go in either direction, right? For right. 6 or 8 hours.
Correct. This
yeah.
this collision scene took up both sides of the roadway, yeah. So we have to shut the whole thing down.
Yeah, I'm sure you people complain about that. Well, that's just too bad, because you got to do this thing right, you know.
Well, it's that's what we think, and but there are complaints, and they move as fast as they can, but we also need them to investigate the thing. So were you able to determine the speed of the run car, the defendant's car coming from Scott County?
Yes, I was using the momentum calculation I talked about earlier. I came up with a range of speed of somewhere around 79 to 83 miles an hour.
Mm.
As he was coming into that crash.
What were they doing?
Based on the witness statement, the witness said that she was going about 45 miles an hour, and so I ranged their speed coming into the crash, and then I ranged the post-collision speeds as they come out.
Head-on? Was it head-on?
It was kind of it was a head-on collision. His car, he was kind of spinning around his center of mass as he was coming in, but his center of mass was moving in a straight line. So when you looked at the pictures, it appeared that that he was coming in at an angle, but the evidence on the roadway didn't support that. It was a head-on when you looked at the way the center masses of the vehicles came into each other, which is important in that calculation.
Yeah.
You know, there's also some of the interesting things, before we get back to Keenan McLaughlin, that we've learned about these vehicular, these reconstruction investigations is... if a pedestrian is hit, frequently there's a gouge or a mark almost a skid mark made by their shoe.
Really?
Right where they were hit.
Is that right?
And another thing is, if the person was wearing a hat, most often the hat drops right where the collision hit.
They keep going, the hat stays there.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
And as far as speed is concerned, they can make just a kind of a rough estimate on whether it's a high speed or not so fast by where the pedestrian hits the windshield, how high up on the windshield. Isn't that right, Ron?
Yes, that's correct.
We're going to take a break. If you have a question, we'd like to hear it. 253-5959. 24 after 9, 924, 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T. Toll free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590, or email jackpatty@wvlkam.com. As we've said many times on this show, TV really uncomplicates things, and it's never as easy as they make it look on TV from the time that you obviously come in and do the investigation of the crime to taking the person to court. It's so easy on TV, and they wrap it all up so nicely in an hour. This one wasn't like that. None of them are, but are we ready to get into some of the complications of the trial?
Sure.
Yeah.
First, let's talk about catching the defendant. Was the defendant there at the scene, Ron, when you got there?
No, the defendant fled the scene on foot after the collision. He ran off toward the rock quarry there on Georgetown Road into the wooded area around that rock quarry, and then made his way to a different location far away from the scene.
And so, Brad, tell us a little. Let's get to how we caught him.
Well, like Sergeant Keaton said, the defendant ran off into the quarry, and he actually, through their investigation, figured out that he made it to the Denny's on Newtown Pike and kind of made his way to 322 East 2nd Street. But during his flight, when the collision happened, a narcotics detective with Lexington was getting ready to execute a search warrant on McLaughlin's house. And he was going over there to do some pre-search warrant surveillance, heard the collision, heard the description of the vehicle, and got on the radio to say, the driver's Keenan McLaughlin, that's his car, this is what he looks like. Then he went and did surveillance on Keenan McLaughlin's house, hoping he might come back that way. What ends up happening is they sit there for about 3 hours and they see a woman come out of the house with three bags. They follow her over to 322 East 2nd Street, watch her go in. When she comes back out, they stop her car and ask, is McLaughlin in there? She says yes, and they surround the house. And then that turns into about a seven-hour standoff with him.
That was that all coincidence that they were there?
Well, what was going on in Scott County, that drug deal had nothing to do with anything Lexington was doing. Okay. They had been, prior to this collision, Lexington had made several controlled buys from him with a confidential informant from McLaughlin. So they were doing their own case. They had no idea what was going on in Scott County. And it's just, I call it good police work that they called him, because he was waiting on a ride to get out of town at that house.
So he was caught by the ERU, Emergency Response Unit.
Right.
Okay. Now, what was he charged with?
Initially, we charged him with two counts of murder. Well, initially, he was charged with murder and assault because Miss Spencer did not pass away for 60 days. But after she passed, we indicted him on two counts of murder, leaving the scene of an accident. And then we charged him with trafficking in a controlled substance first degree, because when the collision reconstruction unit executed a search warrant on his car for their investigation, they found 11 grams of heroin in the trunk.
Is that a lot?
That's a lot.
That's a ton. What's that worth? Any idea? Any idea, Ron?
I think this goes for what, a couple hundred dollars a gram?
I think it's $200 to $300 a gram.
Okay.
You're talking about 28. No, whatever, 11 times 28.6.
It's a lot of drugs, yeah. Okay.
So that's what he was charged with. Now, how do you what are the elements to charge somebody with a vehicular wanton murder?
Well, we have to prove that that he caused the death of somebody, that he was acting wantonly, and that he showed extreme indifference to the value of human life. And to act wantonly, it basically means you perceive a risk, and then you consciously disregard that risk, that your conduct could lead to the death of another human being.
The speeds at which he was traveling is on that kind of a crooked road is what was perceived as the wanton behavior, perceiving the risk that could cause somebody serious physical injury or death. And he disregarded that and did it, and it manifested extreme indifference to the value of human life. So he's charged with wanton murder. Now, Brad, tell us what... So this happened in January of 2014. Here we are in June of 2015. And what sort of happens in between that time, you know, from January to...
Well, with this case, we got a trial date set. We set the trial date last summer for April of this year. And the judge put us on a schedule to turn things in. As usually happens, the defense didn't really comply with the schedule, but we moved forward anyway. And in March of this year, we started having some hearings about potential evidence the defense was trying to limit us from putting in. And the first thing they wanted to get out...
It's okay. Finish that thought. We'll just take it.
Well, the first thing they wanted to keep out was the fact that he had been involved in a drug deal in Scott County. So...
All right. We're going to take a break. We'll continue when we get back here. We got a... 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T, toll free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590. I appreciate you holding, Bill. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. I have a comment and a question. It seems like every time I turn on the news, I'm always hearing about people crossing the center line and head-on crashes. And it seems to be a phenomenon of our time.
You're right.
A phenomenon of our time.
Yeah.
And my question is, do you believe that this is a combination of texting and driving, DUI and drugs, or a combination of all the above?
He's right. It's rare that a week doesn't pass in our city that someone isn't involved with a head-on collision. Well, what's that about, Ron?
He's correct, and basically it is all of the above. Every collision, you've got different factors that are causational factors, and we see a wide range. Sometimes it's drugs. In this case, it was running from the police from a drug transaction. Sometimes it's texting and driving, which is a little harder to prove sometimes for us, but it's just a combination of factors. People not paying attention, being distracted in the vehicles, you know, even just not just texting and driving, but talking to the person in the seat next to them. You look down at your radio for just a half second to turn the volume up or change the channel, and next thing you know, you're on the rumble strip, and you overcorrect and go into the opposite lane.
Right.
You know, it's very interesting that how far you travel in a small amount of time. For example, if you're going 60 miles an hour, how many feet do you go in a second?
At 60 miles an hour, it's approximately 90 feet per second.
In the time it takes you, we've got a public service announcement running right now about distracted driving. And in the time it takes you to look down at you, say your phone goes off, you've got a text. In the time it takes you to grab the phone and look down, it says on the commercial, you will have traveled, doing the speed limit, 2 football fields. Think how far that is without knowing what's in front of you, you know? You make a good point.
It almost makes you want to avoid 2-lane roads.
Yeah. Bill, you make a great point. I appreciate your call.
Okay.
Let's go to Tracy. Hey, Tracy.
Yes, good morning. I was wondering, gentlemen, I'm guessing you worked the accident 2 weeks ago tomorrow on 75 with the Bourbon County girl who passed away.
I did not work that one. That was just inside the Scott County line over in Scott County. They worked that collision.
Well, we've not been able, other than the very first report on the first day of the accident, find any information on the individuals who were driving the car that caused the accident. And I was wondering if y'all could explain why that is.
Well, I know nothing about this. Normally the news gives information about who the parties are, if that's available. Ron, what can you say about
We have procedure? A little information on the day of the accident, but other than that, there's been no news reports, no. From the reports that we've heard is that at fault car was driving at a high rate of speed and overcorrected and basically T-boned the car, or the pickup truck. So, that was on the very first day, but we haven't heard anything in regards to that.
Tell me what it is, what do you want to know?
Were they, I'm sure they've been talked to, just we know with the results of the accident, but no reports on who these people were. Were they, were they intoxicated? Were they charged with reckless driving? We just don't have any information.
Okay, well, my guess is you're going to want to talk to the state police about it. And you could call them. Is that in the Frankfurt Post, Ron?
This collision, I think, you could call that as the Frankfurt Post area. I think Scott County actually worked that collision. And I can answer a little bit of your questions there, such as the intoxication and so forth. As we stated earlier, these are very complex investigations. There's a lot of technical information that has to be figured out throughout the process. Sometimes it may take 6 to 12 months to get those blood test results back to know if anybody is impaired in the crash. And then, of course, the news media, I don't really know what their criteria is for what makes a story, but they're the ones that determine how much information is released, because they call and ask. And we're bound by the law is what we can actually release.
Sure.
A lot of that stuff, too.
Tracy, thanks. I appreciate your call. Now, we've got 2 minutes before the break. Let's get into this thing.
Okay, so, Brad, you were talking about limiting the evidence that could be produced at trial, and that in effect, caused us to amend the charge from murder to manslaughter. And what were those limitations that the judge put on us?
Well, the judge limited any discussion of the fact that McLaughlin was involved in the drug trafficking over in Scott County.
Can you explain why?
The judge felt that it was more prejudicial than probative, which really just says he thought it was more prejudicial than it was helpful to proving the fact that McLaughlin caused this collision and killed these people. We wanted that evidence in because it showed an unbroken chain between the CI would have identified, the person that bought the heroin from McLaughlin would have identified McLaughlin as driving the vehicle that passed the deputy who went after him from being involved in the deal and followed him all the way to Fayette County and caused the collision. Because one of the big things in this case was when the collision happened, he got up and ran. He was able to get out of his car and run, and nobody could really identify him at the scene, and no officers were close enough to catch him when he took off running. So we needed that to get into that. And we also wanted that to show how callous he is and show that extreme indifference to the value of human life. But the judge ultimately ruled that it was more prejudicial than probative.
Well, that hurts, doesn't it? I mean,
well, sure. I mean, because what we were, that limited us to say, why were you involved in this high-speed chase?
Right.
And to say he ran a stop sign or a red light and getting into this high-speed chase, the jury is going to shake their head and say, well, why did you chase somebody over a stop sign, for crying out loud?
We're taking a break, and we'll wrap this thing up when we come back. 253. 10 minutes before 10 o'clock on News Talk 590 WVLK. So we've got a case here where you got a guy that I don't want to say intentionally murdered two people, but he sure didn't care a whole lot about it. He didn't set out to kill him, but he didn't care when he did. But you can't charge him with murder.
Well, you can, but you can't charge him with intentional murder.
Okay, so what's the difference?
Well, the difference is that you can behave in a way that causes the likelihood of serious physical injury or death to occur, and a death does occur, and you can be charged with wanton murder. Now, we just got limited on the evidence that we couldn't let the jury know that this guy had just completed a drug deal and was on his way. We had to basically say that he had run a stop sign or a red light in Georgetown, and as a result, the police got involved in this high-speed chase that would, in my opinion, sound pretty unreasonable to at least some people on a jury. And so were there any other limitations, Brad? Why don't you let Aspen answer that one, because I've been getting so much abuse for
not letting her speak to
yeah.
me. Hey, Aspen.
Good morning.
Good to see you again.
We were limited in several other ways as well. The judge ruled that we couldn't introduce evidence of the heroin that was found in the defendant's car at the time he was fleeing and at the time he was involved in this wreck. We also were unable to introduce evidence about the standoff. We could say where he was found, but we couldn't get into what the emergency response unit does, that they sent robots in there, that they had shot off these gas pellets. None of that was admissible as well.
Is the idea behind the judge limiting this stuff so it's not appealed?
No.
No?
I think what they don't want is for you to make a decision based on anything but the specific facts involving the collision in this case. Now, the police will sit and look at the prosecutors when we get these kind of rulings by a judge and say, what in the heck is going on here? I mean, are we not allowed to tell the truth?
Yeah.
And so we have to kind of fudge in the presentation of evidence so that these kind of, here's the deal. First of all, this guy had a significant record. What was his record in Florida?
Well, he had a felon in possession of a firearm charge. Okay. But that was as a juvenile. He had five felonies as a juvenile on his record.
So this isn't his first
rodeo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, this guy was a bad guy. And so, and he was doing what he does best, and that's sell dope. And then he was selling heroin. And he had a pot full of it in his vehicle. And furthermore, the police knew that the guy had a significant record, and they're not going to send somebody just walking in and to get this guy out of the house. They set the SWAT team. And so when they finally, and we can't talk about that.
Yeah. So this didn't go to trial.
No. So here's what we have to face. We got 12 people that got to be unanimous in their verdict. And so what happens is that we have to talk. We have to decide, what do we think the jury is going to do on this thing if we can't talk about what kind of a cat this guy really is? And so what did we spend a lot of time talking about this. And Brad, what did we finally decide to do?
Well, once the judge limited the fact that he was running from a drug deal and fleeing the police from a drug deal, we ended up having to amend this down to two counts of manslaughter, second degree, which is, had we gone to trial, he would have gotten that instruction anyway as what's called a lesser included offense. But we ended up offering him two counts of manslaughter, second degree, and a trafficking charge, and had him plead on a trafficking charge, a possession charge, and leaving the scene of an accident for a total of 20 years. And he was sentenced yesterday. The judge ran three of the 20 years concurrently, so he got a sentence of 17.
So the judge even reduced our recommendation?
Correct.
Yeah. And
gee!
Yeah. So.
And how much till he's eligible to be considered for parole?
It's going to be about 3.5 years. he'll be eligible to get out after killing two people.
I was going to say, how does that, I wonder how, and Mary Julian could probably tell us, these families of these two people who were killed in this field about that.
We spent a lot of time talking to the families.
Yeah.
And so what's their response to all this, Brad?
They were unhappy with the judge, or they felt like the, at least with respect to Mr. Gonzalez's family, they felt like the criminal justice system had let them down.
Thank you for being here. Unfortunately, we're out of time. See you guys next week. Stand by. We have an update from the Information Center, and Live with Lee is next. I hope you have a great weekend. We'll be back Monday morning at 6, 5 Central.